Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I feel like a locomotive sipping, drinking Arizona. Mixtape just around the corner. Did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like Songa, man. My songs gon' break through like a running back.
Hello and welcome to the podcast that is usually up to speed with Formula One. My name is Mark Hamilton, and joining me as always, my friend, my neighbor, my colleague, my frenemy, Mr. Mark Daly. And it is Monday, November 28th. We are effectively in the holiday season, and we're here to talk about everything but F1 today. But before we kick off, my friend, how the heck are you doing?
I'm good, man. It's been a crazy weekend just behind us. Spent Saturday just throwing up all the Christmas decorations and trying to remember which cord went into which string of Christmas lights that went out front, because last year everything went together and this year I can't remember how it went together. We had the exact same setup, but you know how it goes. But it was fun, man, and just spending some time with the family and now sitting down here in the studio to wrap up the weekend and it with you, buddy, and it's good. Life is good.
This is the point normally where we would be kind of doing our traditional preamble to a Formula One race recap or to our weekly news show. And I start looking at my watch a little bit. It's like, oh, have we gone too far? Are people starting to check out? But we don't have to do that today. And if you didn't know, and if you want a little bit of context, we had decided that we would do what we're going to call the F1 off-topic show. So obviously we've got our interview series, we've got our book club series, we have our race reviews, which we do with Tim Haraney of TSN, and we've got our weekly news show, which is kind of the backbone. But we decided we do a little something a little bit fun just because we get a lot of questions that aren't really F1 related. And I think we wanted to give the audience an opportunity to get to know us a little bit better. And of course, we're now in the off season, and one of our commitments, one of our promises was that we were going to keep content coming. And most of it, I promise, will be F1 related, but not today. So my friend, I'm going to kick this one off with possibly the most relevant question possible, given the timing.
Oh, okay. Can I just clarify? Because I know that we have, because I know that people are going to be watching this on YouTube. So just for full disclosure, I'm wearing a Red Bull racing cap, but I'll just sort of tilt my head here so those of you can see it on camera. So there's a big three on there. There's not a double three. And so basically, this is just, I needed something to wear because, you know, my hair is just a mess. And the first thing I did was grab my Danny Ricciardo hat, which this came from the 2018 Australian Grand Prix from a friend of ours that was visiting in Australia. And she called us and she's like, hey, there's some Formula One thing going on here this weekend that you guys really like, right? Is there anything I could bring back? So I said, yes, of course. If you're at the Australian Grand Prix, please get me a Danny Ricciardo hat. I said, if you could somehow track down Danny Ricciardo to sign it, that would be awesome. But I'm not going to put any expectations on that. So just that, because, you know, otherwise, you know, oh, those guys are Red Bull homers. Although if I put on a Mercedes hat or you did, it'd be, oh, those guys are Mercedes homers. So anyways.
Dude, the context is beautiful. And actually, you know, I'm going to pivot that into a directly adjacent question, which is, because I've got an answer to this, but what is your favorite piece of Formula One merch that you own? Formula One merch that has a story is better, but what is your favorite piece of merch?
My favorite piece of merch is, I've got somewhere, actually it's just off camera here, it is a 2001 Ralph Schumacher Williams hat, and I got that from my very first Grand Prix, which I sometimes get put on blast about because I seem to talk about it way too often on the show, but we went to the European Grand Prix that year at the Nürburgring, and of course anything Michael Schumacher related was completely off the sold out. So I figure, you know, like, of course, if you're going to, and I mean, that was like pretty much peak Schumacher mania at the time, right? Michael, that is. And so there was nothing doing to get any Michael, but there's plenty of Ralph merch. So I figured I'll get that. And just so, you know, I would say it's my most favorite one, but it's the one that's kind of got a funny story towards it. Or behind it,
I love it.
Say.
That's fantastic. I've got a couple pieces that I really enjoy, or I don't really enjoy. They're sitting in glass showcases or they're framed. So I enjoy looking at them. The first one is I bought in 2016 before my wife and I departed for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, which was the finale of that season. I bought one of the one half scale Lewis Hamilton helmets. And I was naive thinking I was going to be able to go to this race and just get Lewis to sign it. But we actually lined up for the Mercedes drivers because they did like a signing session and it was on a big stage, and throughout the day they would bring up different teams, and we were there for Mercedes, and I think Mercedes were the last or almost the second to last team, but we sat in line for about 6 hours. And
oh my God.
They brought Nico Rosberg out because they would normally bring the drivers out. So we were in a really good place in line. And we were right up at the front, and they brought Nico out, which was a little bit weird because nobody really wanted Nico's autograph. So what they said was, hey, anyone in the line that's here for Nico, come forward. So all the people behind us that were there for Nico came forward. And then Lewis came out. So all of a sudden, we're pushed to the back of the line, and it became pure pandemonium. So Lewis was actually good. He actually came off the stage at one point and started going right into the crowd and signing autographs.
Wow,
so I basically put the helmet in my wife's hand and pushed her into the crowd, and she disappeared into this throng of fans. And when she came back, she was holding it above her head with a signature. And it was funny because we literally spent this entire day doing this. And then the next day I'm walking around and just bump into Lewis and got him to sign my hat. So it was kind of funny. But the other pieces that I really love is one of our listeners from Jeddah, actually, Nabila, shout out. She sent both of us a print, and I you can actually see it in the background right there. She actually sent both of us a print from the Jeddah Grand Prix this year, which was fantastic. And I also have a lovely print that I haven't yet had signed from our good friend Andy from the Miami Grand Prix as well. But that actually kind of lines up perfectly because our first question of the night comes from Andy, and it's basically just World Cup question mark. And our listeners, I think, generally know, but maybe this is a good time, Mark, for you to kind of refresh everybody on your passion for that sport, how important it has been to you, and maybe talk a little bit about your broadcasting and journalism career, because all of our listeners know you for this world-famous podcast, humble brag, but talk a little bit about some of the really great work that you've done covering the national team and professional club soccer in the past.
Yeah, so that's kind of like a long story, but it's a cool one and very relevant to, you know, this time, because obviously the 2022 FIFA World Cup is going on in Qatar in the Middle East at the moment. Started just about a week ago now, so we're about 2/3 of the way through the group matches, and there's been some exciting stuff going on. But you know, I come from a European family. I'm first generation Canadian, first one in the family to be born outside of the ancestral homelands on the other side of the pond there. So it's something that I've always grown up with. And, you know, my dad being English and my mom being Dutch, I mean, they've obviously have history at the World Cup and have very established club football leagues in both of those countries. Of course, the English Premiership is probably like the biggest club competition in the world. I mean, it's just absolutely fantastic. I love watching the EPL. And so, I mean, it's just something that I've always grown up with. I'm a diehard Manchester United fan. I'm the only one in the family because, you know, my English side of the family, and I chose it because all my other family, my relatives in England, they, regardless what club they cheer for, they all sounded, they all said that they were United in their hatred for United. So I figured I'm going to be the black sheep in the family and cheer for United. And then, you know, on my mom's side of the family in Holland, and, you know, a lot of them cheer for a little club called FC Twente, which is in Enschede, which is about 100 miles, 160 kilometers east of Amsterdam. Basically, just get in the car, head east, stop just before the German border, and that's where Enschede is. And then it's pretty close to where my family, like, I've got family all around that part of Holland, so that's pretty cool. I have some relatives and friends that have played in, they haven't played, well, actually I have one friend that played for the national team, and then you know, I have other relatives that have played in Holland that have played club football at various levels. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, so my interest when I got into broadcasting, if you can believe it, that this is already going on 10 years. And so I guess it was in 2012 thereabouts, just started randomly blogging for the Vancouver Whitecaps, which is the Major League soccer team here in Vancouver. And then one of these days, or like one day, I get this guy kind of slides into my DMs. He's a guy I kind of interacted with on Twitter a little bit, fellow by the name of Jorge Mendoza. And he's like, bro, I got an idea. Do you want to like meet up for coffee sometime? He said, I don't know where you're at. I'm in New Westminster, which is, you know, just where we live in Coquitlam. It's like 10, 15 minutes down the road. I'm like, yeah, bro, sounds good. I'm on Coquitlam. Let's meet up for a cup of coffee. And so anyways, we sit down. He's like, and he had this idea to do like a Whitecaps podcast. Turns out, I mean, the name was a little bit of a giveaway. I mean, Spanish sounding name. So I knew he was probably from, you know, somewhere in a Spanish speaking country, right? Turns out he's from Mexico City, and he had this whole idea for this Whitecaps themed podcast, like all set up, ready to go. He had a name, he had a Twitter handle, he had logos, and like, cause it, you know, his wife does that sort of stuff. And, you know, he had all this stuff put together, and I went and talked to him, and I remember getting home and saying to my wife, and she's like, well, how did it go? I'm like, I don't know how I can say no to this guy. He's like, he's got everything all figured out. We got on really well together. So we sat down, and right at the end of that season, and I guess the end of the 2012 Major League Soccer season, and I think we banged out three or four episodes, but we never released them, and the original files have long since disappeared into the ether or into cyberspace due to various hard drive failures and things like that. So we released the podcast. We had no idea. Like, we could both, we're fairly decent at blogging and stuff like that. So we kept going with that. And eventually we started covering Whitecaps FC2, which used to be the Whitecaps USL affiliate, which is now, I think they've resurrected it now into a different league, but they used to be in the USL. And then sort of parlayed that into, you know, full credentials for the MLS team. And from there, got to do some pretty cool other stuff, managed to get credentialed for the Canadian soccer program for the CSA, the Canadian Soccer or Canada Soccer Association. Got to cover a whole bunch of really big matches at BC Place in Vancouver. The best one, I think, was, I guess this would be spring of 2016, and Mexico came up to play Canada in a qualifier, I guess, for the World Cup in 2018. And that was unlike anything I think I'd ever seen in Vancouver to that point, because I mean, talk about like a circus. I mean, there was a real hype around that game, and you know, of course, just over the border. I mean, there's obviously a big Mexican expat, you know, community in the United States, and being so close. I mean, we're like only a couple hours from Seattle. The border is maybe half an hour from where we sit, so it's easy accessible for people to cross over either way. So you knew that there was going to be a lot of Mexican fans in the stands for that one. So BC Place, which is about 65,000 seat capacity, was absolutely packed to the rafters, and they brought like a really, really packed, you know, like really stacked team for that one. Mexico did, and it was really, really cool. Because we used to go there and cover all the matches, and there's a media lounge, which, Hammy, you're probably familiar with at BC Place, where you go in, and before a match, you can sit down, you have something to eat, and you know, just kind of chat and whatnot. I remember sitting there with like a bunch of the other media people from Vancouver, other journalists and photographers and whatnot, just sitting there, and it was completely crazy. Then all of a sudden, Jorge Campos walks in there, and like, you know, Jorge is this legendary player from you know, in Mexico. He played for the national team. He was a goalie, super flamboyant, and had this amazing career. Then after he retired, he made this transition. I don't know if he's still doing it, into broadcasting. And like, I mean, the way that he walked in, this larger than life personality, and lots of these Mexican people, like journalists and whatnot, just sort of, and people that were in the media lounge, literally falling over themselves to like say hello and shake his hand. And my buddy Jorge, he's sitting there, he's like, oh my God, that's Jorge Campos. This is amazing. Cause I think he was doing color for that match for Fox Deportes, or maybe it was ESPN Deportes. Anyways, it was really cool, but that was really, really quite incredible. So also from there, managed to do some other cool things as well, like covering the rugby sevens, which has become a real thing here in Vancouver. And if you've never been to like a rugby sevens tournament, I really, really recommend it. But somewhere along the line, like, so started this podcast for the 2016 Formula One season. Then they kind of ran parallel for a long time. But and then I guess in the beginning of COVID is when the other one finally just, it was kind of, I wouldn't say on life support, but it was becoming increasingly difficult for the both of us, Jorge and myself, to sit down and do that together. And then, so that one kind of went by the wayside. And then by that point, I was kind of looking to do other things. So I put all my effort into this podcast, and then we partnered up, was it over 2 years ago now, which is amazing, Hammy. So there was only like a little bit of time where I wasn't really doing anything with anyone else. And then when we partnered up, it was, full speed ahead. It's been great.
That actually kind of leads into the next question I have, which is, and I don't actually know this question, or I don't know the answer to this question,
But
I've heard a little bit about your background in terms of covering club and international football, but I don't really know the origins of this show. I was always mm-hmm. aware of the show because I was a Formula One media consumer and I'm a huge podcast fan. And we were introduced by a mutual Whitecaps fan, a mutual Whitecaps friend, Victor. Shout out Victor, brought us together. Shockingly, I was doing a show, you were doing a show, and it's like, you're both doing a show in the same city, which was incredible. But I don't really know about the origins of this show. So we talked earlier this year about the fact that your show, this show, celebrated its 6-year anniversary, I think, in the spring. It's just a couple of months now away from celebrating its 7-year anniversary. It is one of the oldest F1 podcasts in the world. But what are the origins of this show?
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. So it's just literally something that I decided to do over the 2015 Christmas holiday. Really, I was sitting down, decided, hey, you know what? I've got the equipment. I've got the expertise. You know, Jorge and myself at that point had already done hundreds of podcast episodes. So it was literally just sitting down and coming up and creating this new channel, right? Basically a whole new stream. And in the beginning, it was myself, and I didn't really publicize it because I wasn't really too sure where it was going to go. But originally I just did it, like once a week. And I tried at one point to set a website up and, you know, create some written content. But that just proved too time consuming with family, with work, and, you know, really focusing on the soccer, like everything we were doing for soccer, the blogging, and then also the podcasting and all the other stuff. Like we were doing like a lot of like radio hits at the time. So it was, you know, I was doing like weekly, you know, several hits a week. So there was just a lot of preparation going on in that. So it was interesting that I partnered up with another fellow by the name of Kevin Larame, who's in Montreal. We did that for a couple of years, and then he went on to other things. So I think I did it on my own for about a year. And then it was funny because we got together, you, myself, Tim, and then your other partner from Flash F1,
Gil.
And that was so much fun. And we sat down in my basement studio here literally days before the world crumbled at the beginning of COVID. And you know, it's funny because, you know, I know that ultimately you guys kind of had, you know, wanted to do different things, and Tim lives back east, so we connect virtually whenever we can. But I always go back to that when I think, you know, how much fun that was. And I couldn't help but wonder, I mean, we've kind of really gotten together with, you know, with Tim, but, and it took us a while to partner up. But I kind of wonder if COVID hadn't gotten in the way, you know, what could have come out of that meeting? Because that was an exceptionally good podcast, I thought, because we actually, if you remember, we broke that up into two episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it was a monster. We sat down here for an entire night, but I think we broke it down. It generated about 2.5 hours of audio, which was amazing. It was really, really good. Yeah. And then, so just to sort of like where everybody else sort of comes in, you and I sort of talked at the beginning of COVID, and of course the whole situation with the Formula One season kind of was unsure. And then eventually it started going. You had some other things going on, not podcast or Formula One related. And then, so we sort of got together it was maybe about this time, maybe it was definitely fall of 2020. And then we haven't looked back ever since. I think from what I've checked, I was closing in on about 200 episodes. We hit the 200 episode mark together not too long after we partnered up. And this is episode 394, which is incredible if you think about that as well. So just in a couple of weeks here, we're going to hit episode 400. So, you know, the majority of the episodes of this podcast have been done, you know, with the Daily Hamilton partnership, which is crazy, but really,
that's
really cool.
Insane. That's insane. And the show that I was doing before that you alluded to a little bit was called Flash F1. And I was doing it with one of my best friends, Gil. And later we added Steph Wentworth, who of course has gone on to huge things working with Liberty and all these other big media organizations. Again,
she's so amazing. That's a great story.
Nothing to do with the fact that she partnered with us purely based on her own talent, but, I think COVID kind of took a lot out of me. I think by the time we got, and all the power to you, the fact that you just powered through that 4-month COVID break and kept producing talent, we took a bit of a hiatus and we came back in the summer and we were doing some things, but I think I got a little bit overwhelmed with everything that was going on in my life. And I think a big part of it was I had decided at one point that I wanted to get really involved in provincial and federal politics here in Canada. And it was one of those things where, if this is going to be something that's really serious, something has to break. And unfortunately for me at the time, it was the podcast. So a couple months later, you kind of reached out and you and I were just casually chatting and you're like, hey, do you want to pop on for an episode or a couple episodes? I'm like, well, I'm helping to run a campaign. I wasn't the campaign manager, but I was helping to run a campaign in a provincial election here in BC. And I'm just like, you know what, let me get through the campaign and we'll have a conversation. Mm-hmm. And you'd follow up every week. And I think you were teasing it on the air. And then finally, I think we were able to come together in November, and it's kind of worked out ever since then. And I think you and I both have big aspirations for what we know this could be and how we could conquer other platforms and have our website and social media. I think the biggest challenge is, and especially, I don't know how you do it, man, with three kids. We'll talk a little bit about our kids later, but I think it's just being time starved, right? Wanting to do these things, knowing that we have the capability of doing these things, But yeah, that's great, man. So again, going back to Andy's question, World Cup question mark, for those that maybe aren't soccer fans, talk about where the World Cup resides in the sphere of global sporting relevance. Like, just how big is the World Cup?
Oh, it's huge. It's like one of the biggest sporting events on the face of the planet. It happens only once every 4 years. So all the teams that are in it, the only team that automatically qualifies is the host country, and then everybody else qualifies. It's basically a tournament to get into the tournament, and they all get split up into different groups. So you have UEFA, which is Europe. You have CONCACAF, which is North America and Central America. And then you have CONMEBOL. Then you have and then in Asia. So in Africa, so you get regions representing the entire world. And so it really is amazing. This global tournament that happens only every several years. And it really is, it's appointment television. It's exciting because you get people traveling from all four corners of the globe to support their country, and it is really, really cool. So you get the group stage, then it gets whittled down to the group of 16, and then you get quarterfinals, semifinals, and then the final itself. It takes about a month to play. And then you've got some teams that have won it multiple times, like Italy, Brazil, Germany. They're the big clubs. And then you have other teams, other countries. The USA is in it. They're not quite as strong right now as they were in more recent years. Of course, soccer really became, I'd say, on the map in the United States after USA 94, which was when it was hosted stateside. And that is also the genesis, the birth of Major League Soccer, which has grown and continues to grow. It's not quite there in terms of the level, both talent-wise and maybe perception-wise, to say some of the bigger leagues, especially in Europe, but it's coming along and it's exciting. And there are bigger names coming to play in MLS all the time. And that's one of the marks that people had against it for a while. It's a retirement league because, you know, he had David Beckham played here towards the end of his career and guys like that. But we're starting to see some really, really talented athletes coming to play in this league. And then, but it's exciting, right? Because all of these players will play for a club somewhere. It doesn't matter if it's somewhere in Major League Soccer, in England, Germany, Japan, South America, and Brazil, wherever it is. And so what they do is that their national teams will select players for that tournament. And then, so it's interesting because you could have different sets of groups of fans that cheer against each other's team week in, week out. And then every couple of years, you know, for when you have different competitions like the European Cup or the African Nations Cup, but all these different tournaments or the World Cup, they all get together because all the players of these different clubs come together for the common cause and they get together. So it's really quite exciting to see. But, you know, a bad day for Canada after narrowly losing to Belgium the other day, got hammered 5-1 this morning by 4-1, Croatia.
4-1.
Was it 4-1? I thought it was 5-1 in the end. I kind of lost count after a while. And, you know, I just kind of walked off in disgust. But I guess that the Canada's head coach, John Herdman, made a comment saying that if they played the way that they did against Belgium, that they were going to blank up Croatia, which became like bulletin board material, which really motivated Croatia. And Canada, you know, I mean, the Canadians men's national team, you got to give them props because 5 years ago, we were ranked with, like, you know, teams like Easter Island and Papua New Guinea, Micronesia, San Marino, you know, basically these tiny little countries where the guys that play for the national team are fixing cars or working in a bank, you know, when they're not playing soccer, right? So Canada, I think last time I checked, we're kind of like ranked high 40s, but Belgium and Croatia ranked much higher than that. It was always going to be a bit of a tough job for them, but I think there was some hope that, you know, that Canada might be able to at least get out of the group stage, because we've only been to the World Cup once before, and that was in Mexico in 1986. I barely remember that. Of course, you know, the world from media and television was a completely different place, you know, 35 years ago or whatever the heck it is now. And I mean, now you can watch and get the news and matches all over the place, but it's disappointing. But you could tell that Canada's getting there, but not quite there yet. But, you know, the joke I made afterwards is like, well, now that Canada's broken my heart, it's you know, it's up to England and Holland to, you know, break my heart going forward, because they always seem to disappoint in the the big tournaments. And you know, having ancestry, you know, and family on both sides, I can cheer for both. I tend to cheer more for Holland, having I identify very heavily with you know, my Dutch background and having lived there. But I will cheer for both, but they'll both let me down before it's all over. You know, it's
that was going to
just
be
the way it goes.
That was going to be my next question, because like you,
but Hammy, you know, you're English too, so you know where I'm coming from on this. I mean, this is not
exactly
me being melodramatic.
That's exactly my point, though. Like I have the convenient reality of being able to support multiple teams, and I think going into this World Cup, I think we were going to support in a big way, obviously England, Canada number one, but we were also, because of course my wife's from Iran, we were going to support Iran. In fact, we had jerseys and everything ready to go to support all of these teams, but I think it became very challenging to support the Iranian team based on, I think, a lot of what's happening over there. Mm. Of course, no fault of the players, but it's hard to support that regime in that country. So we kind of put our support of Iran temporarily on ice. But I have become a big fan of the Saudi team. One, I love their jerseys, but two, I love that huge upset against Argentina. So I think that's been a fun story.
That was incredible.
But of course, yeah, now we can support England. And obviously, I think we obviously want the US to be hugely successful because so many of our listeners are there. And I think the success of soccer in the US will spill over into Canada. But it's crazy, man. I was reading earlier today that the CSA, the Canada Soccer Association, their annual budget's $30 million, man. Like that organization needs some serious funding. Okay, next question. Or do you want to take a break?
Sure. Well, we'll take a little break, but I should also say that, you know, one of my best friends is Mexican, so I have to cheer for El Tri. That's just a given. He's given me no other option. So I do also tend to show Mexico a fair bit of love when it comes to the World Cup. But it was very, very tense. If you go back to the 2014 World Cup, Holland and El Tri played each other. There was an incident, no era penal, and that's been a bone of contention between myself and my good friend Jorge ever since. You know, our friendship survived it just. The podcast at that time survived it just, but it's time to to move on. Anyhow, we'll do so just a moment. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, welcome back. Mark Daly and Mark Hamilton coming to you at the end of a very long Thanksgiving weekend, Cyber Monday, and then tomorrow being Giving Tuesday. Welcome to one and all, especially those of you joining us on the live chat, the regular cast of characters.
Shout
there.
Out Javier, Chris, great... welcome.
Yeah. And Connie and Rocky, so a fair amount of people. I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving and thanks for spending some time with us this evening. So this is our first ever off-topic F1 show, or F1 off-topic. We basically barely talked any F1 so far, so we're going to keep doing that because, you know, you basically assembled a lot of the questions that we get that don't really slot into the regular show with any ease because, you know, we tend to be a little bit long-winded. I know. People will probably not believe us when we say this, but, you know, I'm joking. We know we're long-winded, so some of these things, if we were trying to talk about in a regular show that really already starts to run, like, you know, 90 minutes on a good week, sometimes a little bit more, then, you know, kind of get off one of these off-topic, you know, subjects, we might be there for another 90 minutes on top of
it. Oh, man. Daly, you said something before the break, and I've been meaning to ask you about this for a very long time, and I'm hoping the audience isn't too big because I know this is going to sound really, really stupid, but the Netherlands being Dutch and Holland, I get, for some reason, I get very confused understanding the difference between Holland, the Netherlands, being referred to as Dutch. Can you break down what the Netherlands is and where Holland fits into this? Because people often use Holland interchangeably as if it's a country on its own, which isn't the case. And I know a lot of people get confused. Maybe share a little bit of background.
Yeah, I mean, like the Netherlands is the name, and then Holland is more of like a province. You have Noord-Holland in the west of the country, which is kind of a little bit counterintuitive. But yeah, it's really, you know, interesting because, you know, Holland is it's really such a small country, but it's very, very diverse in the amounts. Like it's very different, and you always hear the term like double Dutch, and there are so many dialects like in the country that is really small. Then you have Friesland, which is in the northeast-ish corner, and Fries is a completely different language. If you have somebody speaking Dutch and somebody speaking Fries, they can't even understand each other.
Wow.
And then it's interesting if you have like somebody speaking dialect in a different part of the country and they just can't understand each other either. And then even you have like the dialects that are similar, you go like 10 miles down the road, there's even like subtle differences to the dialect itself. But it's kind of interesting too, because where my family in Holland is from is pretty close to the German border. So that dialect actually extends into Germany as well. And back, and now it's different, right? Because everybody there, like in our generation, even before, learned English. And you know, I know so many people in Holland, they speak Dutch, they speak English, they speak German, they speak French, they speak Spanish. Many of them are at least bi, if not trilingual. Most of them speak their dialect as well. It's really quite incredible. But back in the day, especially for like the older generation, for like my grandparents, for example, they might not speak a lot of German, but they could, if they ran into some of the German people that were sort of like immediately adjacent to them just over the border, they could still communicate in their dialect, which is kind of cool as well. So
very cool,
it's a bit of a funny country that way, but it's a very, very cool culture. I really dig it. And like I say, I mean, I really identify heavily with it. I'm completely fluent in Dutch. And even though I lived in Oldenzaal, which is where my family's from, which is in the eastern part of the country, I spent most of my working time in Utrecht, which is, it's one of the bigger cities in Holland. It's just to the east. If you have Amsterdam a little bit more north and Rotterdam a little bit further south, Utrecht more or less would make that triangle to the east and to the north a little bit. So I'm told that when I speak Dutch that I speak with like an Utrecht accent, which would make sense because I spent many, many years working there, which was crazy because everybody thought like I was completely insane. They're like, why do you spend so much time driving to and from Utrecht each and every day? I'm like, dude, it's like an hour. It's like nothing. They're like, you should get like a place. You can stay there, go there on Sunday night, come back Friday. And then I'm just like, dude, it's an hour in the car. It's not like a big deal. I'm like, if I really wanted to live in Utrecht, I'd get a place and I'd live there. There'd be none of this, you know, spending like 5 days there, then coming home on the weekend kind of thing.
Yeah.
Especially it's like an hour commute. Like I can do this, you know? So anyways, awesome. Long story, I know.
Awesome, man. Next question is from Michelle, who I had the distinct pleasure of actually meeting in Vancouver during the summer.
Yeah, cool.
What are your kids into? Hobbies, sports, TV shows, etc. So I'll jump into this one to give you an opportunity to take a sip of Joe. But my son, who we speak about quite often on the show, is an only child, will always be an
the
only
Parsa.
Child. Yeah, the Parsa. He will remain an only child. But in the context of our household, he is more like a roommate. There is very little of that parent-child dynamic going on. He more or less, he's a sweetheart. He's incredibly well-behaved. He's not destructive. But he does what he wants. He eats what he wants. He sleeps where he wants. It's basically it's basically his house, and everything that we do is a negotiation between the three of us. But in terms of the stuff that he's into, he goes through phases. He's 5 years old. He used to love cars. He likes monster trucks. He loves trains. His biggest obsession, and this is certainly not something that I've really started to nurture until recently, is he's obsessed with basketball. And we have basketball hoops all throughout our house, and we've got one in our front yard.
Nice.
He loves the NBA. He's been learning all the teams. His favorite player is Kevin Durant. He loves LeBron James. We've watched that awful Oklahoma City Thunder movie on Netflix, Thunderstruck, no less than a million times in the last couple of months. His favorite food is, he loves Middle Eastern food, so shawarma, doner, Persian food,
Bagley Koto,
all of that kind of stuff.
Love it.
And in terms of music, he loves Persian pop music, and he loves Drake. But I think the Drake thing is more or less just kind of a spillover to the fact that that's what he's grown up listening to. But I think we've been a little bit like, I have to keep reminding myself that the stuff that it was okay to watch and listen to around him when he was 2 and 3 and he probably wasn't going to regurgitate is highly problematic now. Like I left him in the bedroom the other day because he wanted to dance to a Drake song, and a song came on afterwards. I think I think it was the Miley Cyrus Juicy J song 23. And my wife walked into the room and he's basically quoting Miley Cyrus, like, quote unquote, this is so bad for a 5-year-old, but he's like dancing around quoting Miley Cyrus singing like, I'm in the club high on perp with shades on, tatted up mini skirt with my J's on my feet, J's on my feet, basically quoting bits and pieces of the song. I was just like, oh, I've got to be very careful with what I leave on around him. But in terms of TV shows, again, he's been through a lot of stuff, but right now he really loves any like NBA clip shows. He really likes Hotel mm-hmm. Transylvania. And I think he's kind of been through a Mr. Bean phase recently as well. And there's a ton of Persian stuff that he's watched, like Hola Guermezi and things like that. But yeah, otherwise he's really good. And like I shared on a podcast recently, he's taken to referring to his teachers at school as sure bro and yeah, baby, which has elicited some more uncomfortable conversations, of which there are many with his teachers. But yeah, other than that, it's good. I think our dream when he was born was, hey, we would love if he could be an F1 driver, if he could be a soccer star, or if he could be a professional basketball point guard, because I have no savings for my retirement. None. I have no plans. Oh, I will never retire. Neither do I. Yeah. So he will be my retirement plan. And I think it's become very clear that he's not going to be a Formula One driver because of the cost of that sport. So fingers mm-hmm. crossed he can find his way into the NBA as a 6'2" point guard. but that's it. What about you? So you have three kids. You have three kids. Contextualize your home life for the listeners tuning in today.
Oh my God, it's hell. I know. I joke, but I have to laugh a little bit. I was just thinking what you were just talking about, Parsa, to say that he's your insurance policy almost on the fact that you have like no retirement savings. I feel exactly the same way. I kind of had all the hopes for my kids. My oldest, Brockton, he's 14. Alexis, my daughter's 12. Brody is 7, going on 8. And Brockton, you know, I'll be honest, I had all these high hopes for him too. I'm just hoping now he graduates high school. Anything beyond that is going to be a bonus. But I joke. They're all great kids. Brockton's into sailing and he's getting really, really good at it. You know, my weekends are spent in the fall and in the spring taking him to sailing practice and to regattas and stuff like that, which for a parent sucks because a lot of these regattas are out at these really snobby like yacht clubs, and they're great to the kids, to the sailors. But if you're like a non-yacht owning parent, it's like, why the F are you here and why are you not leaving? So I try to spend the least amount of time there possible because I think sailing's great, but I just don't like the vibe in a lot of these clubs. Now, Alexis, she's big into competitive cheer, and that is a sport which before she got into a couple of years ago, I knew nothing about. And then she did what was called like prep, which was like non-competitive, just like this is several years ago now when she was a little bit younger, to see if she liked it or not. And she did. So we put her into competitive cheer, and the amount of confidence it's given her, not just in the athletic side, but also with her personality, because she was pretty introverted when she was growing up. It's amazing. They just had a showcase today at the gym where she's a member. There were several hundred athletes and parents and stuff, and it was just amazing watching them. Like, and some of the older teams, they went to the Worlds in Orlando last year, and so, you know, some of them, their respective levels, level 7, which is like basically like Olympic and international level, they got like second and third, like at the World Championships, which is amazing. But it's just a great vibe, and I've learned to really love the sport, and it's kind of cool. The neighbors that just moved in last spring, their daughter's on the same team, so it's kind of cool. To do that. My youngest, he's not really too sure what he shows no real interest in sports at all, but you know, much like Parsa, he really likes Mr. Bean. There's a phase there, but I had to laugh because I was kind of thinking, because you know, I've said that I'm not buying a new car until these kids grow up a little bit, and I can trust them that if I buy a new car, that they're not going to beat the crap out of it because they've beaten the crap out of the car that I have now. I'm just like, I'm going to keep this thing rolling as long as I can.
Smart move.
And then, yeah. Anyway, so my car is kind of old in that regard. I mean, most of the time when I'm in there, I'm streaming like a podcast, or I'm listening to something on satellite radio, or just listening to some music. but it does have like a 6-disc CD stack in there. So
that is not a brag in 2022, my friend. That
no,
is not a brag.
No. But so like several weeks ago, I was sitting here like, oh yeah, this thing's got a CD player in there. So I wonder what's in there. So I hit CD and the first thing that came on was Tupac Shakur.
No. Now,
fortunately, the song that came on was California Love. So, but you know, also I turned it off as quick as possible because I wasn't sure which song might come.
Right. That's an awesome
after
story.
That. So yeah. So I did eject the disc. So it was All Eyes on Me was the album. And So it's been in there for probably at least 10 years. So
I love
it. There you go.
That's so awesome. Oh my gosh. And your kids, not to put all of your business in the street, but I think at least some of your kids up here in Canada, public school students have the option of going into an English school or a French immersion school, regardless of where you live. And increasingly, we are seeing the opening of Mandarin immersion schools. But I think at least some of your kids are at French immersion schools too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So my oldest two are in French immersion. We put them into like what's late start French immersion. So they started in grade 6 when they went into middle school. And that's really cool. I mean, you know, much like yourself, the only French that I got when I was growing up and going to school was like a French class, so like an hour or two per week.
Same.
And I kind of have regrets that I didn't really take it more seriously now, like at this age. I wish that when I was younger that I'd really pushed myself more. Because I took it in high school when I needed to, but I never pursued it as an elective. And as I've gotten older, I've really come to learn to love languages. And like I say, I learned how to speak Dutch. We only spoke a little bit of it in our house growing up, but I took it upon myself to learn it the hard way. And by the hard way is like when I went to go, like originally I went to Holland to travel for a year, and then that ended up becoming 7 years. But after I started I decided I was going to stay there long term. I started being really stubborn with people because, you know, they love speaking other languages, the Dutch do. So they love speaking English. If you're Canadian or American, they just completely freak out. They want to speak English all the time. So I became that guy that would refuse to speak English with them. and was with the family was okay because they knew what I was up to. But, you know, after a while, you know, like I say, I kind of wish, just going back to the French thing, that I'd taken it a little bit more serious.
Right.
And I'd like to learn it now. You know, I do have, what is it called? Rosetta Stone. And I really feel like, I'd like to learn more, you know. But it's funny, I just hear Javier Ramos in the live chat, his chat said, Bark regretting not learning more languages is hilarious. He is already overachieving.
Oh, dude.
So I feel firmly put in my, thank you for the reality check.
I love it.
Duly noted.
Yeah, because of course you need a ninth language, right? You don't need to be, you're already transcribing and translating on the fly German and Spanish F1 articles on the podcast, and of course Dutch. But that was actually going to be my question, was your language. And I think that's, I think given the fact that you had the experience living in that country and kind of growing up, at least in a somewhat bilingual house, I think that's pretty cool. And of course, your kids are growing up bilingual as well, because of course, they're growing up going to French immersion. And one of the things that we tried so hard with Parsa, in fact, before Parsa was born, like I said before, my wife is Persian. So we use Iranian and Persian almost interchangeably. And we also use Persian and Farsi. Farsi is the dominant language in Iran. Like we use Persian and Farsi interchangeably as well. But I started going to Farsi classes in 2017. I have a great teacher. I still go. So at home, we try to make that the dominant language. And that's the only language Sarah's relatives and family speak with him as well. But sometimes I have to check them, because he earlier this year had made this conscious decision that while we only speak to him in Farsi, he'll only respond to us in English. And I think early on that created a lot of anxiety, because there was this fear that he was losing that part of his culture, and he clearly understands it, but it's been a real fight to get him to speak it. And then the other big piece too that I've been taking on myself is I want to learn as much Arabic as possible. And that's a little bit easier because I have a really good grasp of the alphabet. So the Persian language uses the Arabic alphabet. It adds 4 additional letters, which is kind of cool, because the Arabic language doesn't have a P equivalent. So we have P, we have the P sound in English, and in Farsi, they have a letter called P, which again is the P equivalent, but in Arabic, they don't. So typically in Arabic, if you see a sign that says Pepsi, for instance, which would have two P's, Pepsi, in Arabic, when you read it, it would read as Bebsi. So they typically substitute the P's for B's because that's the closest equivalent in their alphabet. Now, people that speak Arabic obviously know that that's supposed to be a P and that does a P sound, so they would read it as such. But because I have such a good grounding in the Persian alphabet, which is borrowed from the Arabic alphabet, I can generally read Arabic quite well as well. The tricky is my word count in Arabic is very, very, very low. There's probably 10,000 loan words in Persian from Arabic, but I don't know enough that I can get through most sentences with any sense of what's going on. And one of the things that makes Persian such a cool modern language is there's no gendered pronouns. So it's always just they. There's no he, there's no she. And in Arabic, like in English and in French, there's a lot of gendered pronouns, which makes learning it much more complex. But in Farsi, there isn't. So it's that much. So when you're conjugating verbs and you're basically just learning the language, it's easier to know that it's just they. It's not a he, it's not a she, it's just a they, which is pretty cool. My friend, the next question up was from Larry Walden III, and it is fishing podcast. My friend, I am not a fisher. I haven't fished since I was a child. It is not something that gets me particularly excited. Is fishing something that's part of your world?
Not really, because me and sharp objects like fishing hooks just don't get along. So, no, I don't. Like I did when I was a kid growing up, but that's just it's a sport. I just don't have enough time to do it. I don't really know anyone. I mean, it's a friend of mine does quite a lot of it, but I don't. And I know it's a lot more nuanced than just going out to the local fishing hole with a rod and some bait and just casting a line. But maybe one of these days that's something I could, you know, partake in if I ever get free time back in my life.
If you have enough free time to fish, I will assure you're using it to work on the podcast. I will not allow you to fish. My friend, one of the things that I promised I was going to ask you, and you've had a couple of days to kind of stew on this, is what is, and it doesn't have to be 90s. Let's just generally say, what are some of your favorite sitcoms? They could be British, they could be American, they could be Dutch, although I won't have heard of them. What are some of your favorite sitcoms of your years growing up consuming TV?
So like any sitcom, I grew up with with an English dad. So we grew up with a fair amount of things like, British humor. So Fawlty Towers, Monty Python, anything like that. I was particularly a big fan of Rowan Atkinson and Blackadder as always. I thought like was a really, really funny show. As for sitcoms, wow. I guess back in the day, you know, I was a big fan of Seinfeld, big fan of The Office. I love The Office. I just can't get over it. Like Brooklyn Nine-Nine is another show I can go back and just watch over and over and over again. Those are what I would say would have to be my main ones. Those are ones that I always kind of go back to. How about yourself, Amy?
I love, so same as you, that I grew up in a British home. I grew up in the UK, so we consumed a ton of British sitcoms. And that could be Blackadder, that could be Red Dwarf, that could be Fawlty Towers, that could be Monty Python, that could be The Young Ones. It could be, obviously, The Office.
God, The Young Ones,
came later as well. And I really like the British Office. I think it's something that I have to be in a specific state of mind to really enjoy it. Whereas the American Office, which is just a brilliant, brilliant program, I could sit down and pluck out any episode at random from their 9 seasons, and I'm going to enjoy it. Even though I've probably seen it 100 times before, I'm going to love it. And I don't think there's many other series that I hold in that regard. I really liked Seinfeld during its run until it ended in 98. I still remember the big lead up to that finale. Of course, Friends was a great show in the 90s. I'm trying to think, and by trying to think, I mean, I'm scrolling through Google right now, trying to see if there's anything else obviously I missed. Yeah. Sex and the City, Fresh Prince was great.
One, Fresh Prince was a great one of the original. I never watched the reboot that
apparently
came out when
it's
was
good.
About.
Apparently, it's good.
Yeah, yeah. It came out earlier this year, right?
I think so. Yeah, and it's more of a. I understand it's more of a drama. Like I think it's an hour long drama, yes. But the same context.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Definitely worth checking out. And another comedian that nobody on this podcast has probably ever heard of is Joep van het Hek. He's a Dutch comedian that I really liked from way back in the day. So,
dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, and my favorite DJ in Holland back in the day is a guy called Edwin Evers. He used to be the morning guy on Radio 538, and he did this really hilarious impersonation of Frank and Ronald de Boer, the soccer players, and they always came off less than intelligent, but the little skits that he used to do with them, like they would basically the whole pretext would be like they would call into the show and there would be some ridiculous scenario going on. It was so funny. But when he stopped working Radio 538 a couple of years ago, I think he had either one or both of the brothers on the show. Wow. And they had a good laugh because, you know, he really got years of great content at their expense. But, I mean, it wasn't anything degrading. I mean, they did come off, a little bit less than intelligent. But it was always it was meant well and it was done really, really quite brilliantly. I'd love to play some clips, but sadly, I think I'd be about the only person that would probably understand the humor in it, and obviously the fact that it would be in Dutch. Yeah, so yeah. There's that.
That's great. And probably going to get some eye rolls for this, but I should also mention I was I'm definitely going to get some eye rolls for this, but I was also a huge fan of Entourage during its run, although the 2015 theatrical production was a little bit disappointing. My friend, this is what I'm going to kick over to you because you're the NFL guy. Mm-hmm. But we have a question here from TC, and his question is college football playoff prediction, smiley face. But I'm going to make that a college football / NFL play. And again, it's still the end of November, early December when you're listening to this. So we're not quite close to the NFL playoffs yet, but I don't follow college football. I don't know much about the NFL. Mm-hmm. We're probably shedding listeners as those words are coming out of my mouth. But from your perspective, do you follow college football? And from an NFL perspective, what are you expecting to see from a playoff kind of a playoff?
Yeah. I'm a huge NFL guy. I mean, before we sat down here, I just watched Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles beat the Green Bay Packers. So I was watching that this afternoon. I love college football, but I'll be straight up with you guys. I haven't had a chance to really follow much this year. I know that the odds on favorite to maybe win the national championship this year is the Georgia Bulldogs, but I don't know why. For some reason, I'm just really feeling both Ohio State, the Ohio State University, and also USC. I just feel that somewhere that both of those two schools could be in the mix. Who's going to win the national championship? I don't know. I just feel like Georgia's too easy of a pick and to win it all. Maybe they will. Maybe they won't. But for some reason, you know, there's this little voice in the back of my head is saying keep an eye on both the Buckeyes and the Trojans. But I'm going to, you know, label that or just to kind of give a warning here that anytime I say to pay attention because I got a good feeling about this driver, this team, this game, run away from that as fast as possible because I'm historically really, really bad when it comes to making predictions like that. But I mean, wow. I mean, just looking at the NFL like this year, I mean, I keep going back. Like the one thing that that was outstanding was that AFC Championship game last year between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills, especially was at that third or fourth quarter when Mahomes and Allen they went at it with handbags. That was probably the best football or quarter of football I've seen in my entire life. But I mean, It's crazy. I mean, I'm just to look at the standings here, the AFC East, you got Miami, the Miami Dolphins, 8-3, 11 weeks or 12 weeks into the season, wherever we're at right now. And that's on par with the Buffalo Bills. I mean, you look at the Tennessee Titans, 7-4, Kansas City, 9-2. Then in the NFC, you got the Philadelphia Eagles, 10-1, Dallas, 8-3. Vikings are looking good at 9-2. And then the Buccaneers, you know, they're a weird team. I mean, the NFC South is really, really weak. I mean, the way you look at it right now, I mean, they, you know, the Bucs are on top of that division at 5-6. You got the Falcons, the Panthers, and the New Orleans Saints. I mean, all four of those teams are below 500. But then over the NFC West, I'm really liking what I'm seeing from the 49ers. I got a bit of a soft spot for them because I kind of cheered for them as a kid growing up. They're 7-4. I mean, you go back to like basically the first like series on offense at the beginning of the year, Trey Lance, who was going to be the guy, goes down with a season-ending injury. I mean, I don't think it was like the first, you know, snap of the year, but I mean, it happened pretty early in that game. And Jimmy Garoppolo has come back in, and I mean, he took a, you know, pretty heavy pay cut to stay in San Francisco. I mean, he's done a pretty good job. I mean, that team as a whole has done a pretty good job to be on top of the NFC West at 7-4. But then another team that just, you know, really boggles my mind, the Denver Broncos in the AFC West, 3-8. I mean, they made such a fanfare of picking up Russell Wilson, you know, bringing him that big mega trade that they made with the Seahawks. I mean, that has just not worked out for them at all. 3-8. I mean, they're even worse than the Raiders, who are 4-7. I mean, the Raiders are the Raiders. It doesn't matter where they are in LA, Oakland, or now Las Vegas. I mean, the Raiders just always kind of tend to be the Raiders, or either seem to be good or really, really Raider-ish, and that's where they are right now. And I mean, the Broncos are even worse than them at the moment, which is crazy. But you know, I'm kind of thinking that in the NFC Championship game, I don't know how it would work out just with the seeding and everything like that. I think it would be incredible to see the Eagles and the Vikings, you know, maybe even the 49ers get in there. I'd love to see a rematch in that AFC Championship game between the Chiefs and the Bills. I love watching both of those teams, you know, anytime that, because I don't get like the full NFL package at home. It's just, and so many other subscriptions that I have, you know, getting the NFL one and, you know, trying to keep up with all the games that I might get a chance to watch anyways is just not money well spent. But whatever comes on, you know, on the TV is good enough for me. But certainly, I'd love to see any of those teams.
Did you ever get a chance?
Sorry, go ahead.
You ever get a chance, knowing that, A, you lived in the Netherlands, two, you're a big NFL fan. Did you ever go and see the Amsterdam Admirals of the NFL Europe League play?
No, I didn't, but NFL Europe was definitely around back in the day, and it was kind of funny because on a Sunday night, you know, there's a 6-hour time difference between the East Coast and Central European time, which is where Holland is. So I'd be able to sit down, and they didn't, like, I'm sure it's different now, but back then you could kind of get like some extended highlights. So, you know, that time is when the St. Louis Rams were the greatest show on turf. And so it always seemed that if there was extended highlights, or maybe kind of like, what do they call it? The NFL red zone, where they kind of have like this rolling kind of like they'll go from game to game to game. It seemed like that the Rams were always on TV because you had Kurt Warner, Torrey Holtz, and all those guys. I mean, that really was some amazing
That's
football
awesome,
that
man.
They played back in the day. But I never got a chance to go and check it out because there was the Admirals, what was it, the London Monarchs? You know, there's about, what, 5 or 6 teams in the NFL Europe. But I guess ever since that kind of folded, I mean, they've really taken it to another level playing, you know, NFL games in London, which they've done for a
and
number
now
of years.
Germany,
I think
they just too. Lots coming to Germany.
Yeah, they played in Munich, and I think they were just in Mexico City the other week as well. So, I mean, I can see like the cities like Mexico City and London definitely supporting, you know, having the population base, but also the financial support to support an NFL team. But be kind of crazy to have a permanently based NFL team in London, England. Yeah. But it'd be cool too,
definitely.
Right?
One last question before we sign off for the night. And this is kind of a broader question. But Daly, what is your 3-year plan? What is your 5-year plan look like?
Well, unfortunately, I'll look kind of the same because you. I'm not independently wealthy, and I haven't been received a phone call or a letter from some lawyer that I've never heard of saying that some rich relative that I'd never heard of has passed away and has willed me $10 million. So unfortunately, 3 and 5 years down the road, I still anticipate I'll be working, much like I anticipate I'll still probably be working to pay off my bills and my mortgage long after I've departed this this earth. But, I mean, there's always the hope that at some point can kind of like dial back on the 9-to-5 grind and be able to put more energy and time into what we do here, and just spend more time with the family. And I'll be honest, during the course of my career right now, I've put in a lot of hard work and a lot of hours, and I've missed a lot of family time and a lot of family vacations and special events and stuff like that. So I'm at that point in my life now, where 50's a lot closer than 40 and retirement's like a lot closer than high school, which kind of scares me. That those are where more of my priorities are, is like more me and more family time. So whether or not I can make that a reality, I don't really know, but that's what I'm working towards. And you and I talk about this sort of stuff a lot, and I think we're in a pretty similar headspace when it comes to that, Hammy.
Yeah, I greatly respect your position, especially around trying to find some work-life balance, which I think can always be difficult, especially in your high pressure industry that you work in, and just knowing how incredibly vital and important a role you play in your organization. It doesn't surprise me, but and just saying this as a friend and a colleague, obviously I hope you find a way to find that balance, because you obviously have a big family, and it's one thing when the kids are young, and it's another when they start to get into that kind of middle school, high school age where your presence and your leadership are that much more important to their development, because they're coming across moments in life where decisions are being made and you want to make sure that they're on the right track. I think for me,
100%, right?
I think for me, it's pretty simple that we're very, and I think for a lot of people listening to the US, they might shake their heads like, wow, you have a house, like that's not a big deal. But where we live, where we live in Canada, owning a detached single family home is pretty unusual. And I think my wife and I, we sacrificed an awful lot over the course of a decade to put ourselves into a position where we could get one, and we have one. And I think that my ideal goal is to eventually get it rented out, because I think my 2-year goal, my 3-year goal, and I love my employer, but I think my 2-year, 3-year goal is I want to have a business in the Middle East, and I want to be able to spend a lot more time there. I want to have a permanent address there that we kind of call our own apartment or something like that. So I think for me, in the next 2 to 3 years, probably less than 3 years, but in the next 2 years, really start to put pen to paper in terms of kind of registering the business and making it real, and starting to do some consulting work. But also I want to be able to start doing more of this. And I think being potentially at least spending part of the year in a part of the world where you have 3 or 4 Grand Prix that are a 2 or 3 hour flight away from where you are, would be pretty cool, because I think you and I are very much on a remote outpost when it comes to F1, right? Like, we've got Austin, man, and Austin's not super easy to get to. It's a flight to Houston and a 2 or 3 hour drive, or it's a 6 hour flight to Montreal, or it's a 6 hour flight to Miami. It's tough for us to get to some of these places. So I think my goal is, like, obviously, kind of we're well positioned here in the BC Lower Mainland. We're incredibly blessed that we were able to do some things to make that a reality for us. But at the same time, I think that, I'm like you, kind of on the wrong side of 40. And I think for the sake of our family, I want to be able to get a toehold in the Middle East as well. And I think that would be, getting that toehold. Yeah, I think getting that toehold in the Middle East would be something that's really important to us, and could potentially unlock some other things. The challenge, of course, is that when you're living here, and I've been working with the same company now for, I guess this is my 22nd year with the company, so I've been there for a very, very long time. So obviously,
good for you, man.
Yeah, dude. Like, obviously, it's been a great partnership. They're great to me. I feel like I've been great to them. But when you've had that kind of security, it's kind of hard to to consider other options, but I'll continue to bust mm-hmm. my ass and work for them until I kind of firmly kind of have decided what I want to do in the next couple of years. But maybe yeah. be able to do that while doing something over there would be kind of cool as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing, right? I mean, I know that work-life balance thing is something that's a term that's thrown out there a lot. And it's sometimes really difficult to focus on that when you're just trying to make it through the grind of 9 to 5, when you got bills to pay and, you know, things to do at work and, you know, a family to house and to feed. You know, sometimes it's difficult to focus on those things for yourself, right? Totally. I mean, sometimes it's difficult just to sit down. You know, it's difficult for my wife and myself to sit down and just spend some time together because it's been a long day. I'm tired, she's tired. And then, you know, just to, you know, getting that quality time together when, you know, the kids are finally asleep or whatever. I mean, we're both exhausted by that time. So to even think like a month or a year down the road it's just really, really difficult. But I always say to my brother, I'd love to be in that position because, you know, like one of the things I love to do as well is like, I'm an avid skier.
And right, I forgot
I've
that.
Always said that I'll know that I've really made it to where I want to be, that if there's like a nice powder day, that if, you know, I'm not living on a mountain, then at least I can just hop in my car and drive up to the hill and get some turns in and ride some of that fresh pow, because, you know, those days don't come very often. So it's like, if I'm in a position to say, well, you know, screw it, I'm not working today, I'm going to hit the slopes, then I'll know that I'm there where I want to be. I'm not there right now, but oh no, ask me again in 3 years, Hammy. Ask me in the 2025 edition of this, or 2024 edition, and see, we'll both see where we're at then. So who knows,
my friend. That's all. Yeah. I've got I think for everyone listening at home, cool. We do still have a lot of great content coming over the back half of December, for the duration, the entirety of December. We promise we're going to keep pumping out content, so please don't tune out. We'll be right back to F1 starting this Thursday. I've already started putting together the agenda. It seems more and more likely that Matteo Bonato will be on his way out. There are rumors from the Italian press that
crazy
Ross Braun might be coming back. Of course, no one has actually spoken to Ross Braun about this, and I don't know that he's interested in taking on a team principal role once again, but it's a super sexy concept or topic to talk about. So make sure you tune in later this
definitely
week.
Right?
And as always, if you enjoy this podcast, if you like what I do, like what we do, the only thing that we can ask is give us a subscribe. If you listen on Spotify, give us a rating. And if you listen on Apple, give us a rating and review. It means the world to both of us.
Yeah, I love it. And of course, if you want to get in touch, send us a tweet on the Twitters at ScooteryF1Pod, or email ScooteryF1Pod@gmail.com. And like Hammy said, that's all we got. We'll be back on Thursday. Enjoy your week, guys. And when we talk to you next, we actually will talk about Formula One. But this was a lot of fun, Hammy. We should do this again sometime. All right, guys, have a great week. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.